Hi, join me and my guest for another exciting episode of the Digital Identity Nordics podcast. Our mission is to provide insights from identity experts worldwide and gain a clear understanding of what the future of identity will look like. We are proud to interview with some of the top identity experts from around the world and explore with their unique perspectives. Before we begin, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Scenecat, for their invaluable support, as well as our members who has helped us build a thriving community of identity enthusiasts. To learn more about Scenecat and our members, please visit our website. Joining us today is Dr. Carsten Stöcker, CEO of Sphere-D. A physicist turned tech and identity expert with a wealth of business knowledge to share. We are honored to have him here with us today, and we are excited to learn from his diverse background and expertise.
Hello, Snorre.
Hello.
Hey, that's great.
You hear me and I hear you.
Yes, loud and clear. Sounds good.
Perfect.
And you just let me know when you feel ready and we can just start.
Yeah, no, I think we can start. Maybe my son will come home in a couple of minutes and we need to interrupt.
No problem.
It's great to have you here, Carsten. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
My name is Carsten Stöcker. I'm a physicist, and I basically worked for a couple of years with Accenture, almost 13 years, did a lot of large-scale system integration projects. Then I joined a utility, and a big German utility, and at utility, I joined their innovation team. And in the innovation team, I worked on technology-driven business model innovation. And this was around 2015. And at the same time in 2015, Gartner published a thesis. They basically introduced the idea about the programmable economy and a programmable economy with on-demand markets, with dynamically defined value chains. And programmable economy where transactions get automated on the one hand side, on the other hand side, a programmable economy where, yeah, in a digital age, everything is connected to every other thing, where a lot of bots are in the internet and start to, yeah, to distract you, that want to transact with you. Is it a good bot, a bad bot, who knows? And then they also introduced the idea of the reputation and attention economy. So in the context of the programmable economy. And that's interesting because attention is basically how can I find an actor in the internet? Yeah. How can I get the attention of my partners, my customers? That's on the one hand side. So it's about discovery. So how do I distinguish myself from all the bots? Yeah. All the bots on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and then they're also talking about the reputation economy. And both attention and reputation is pretty much linked to identity, because now I need to build a reputation that I'm a real human, a reputation that I'm a physicist, a reputation that I work for Sphere-D, or as a company, I need a reputation that this is a Sphere-D GmbH, or that I'm authorized to do something, that I have a license to operate, a TÜV certificate, an ISO certificate. And this all kind of creates, yeah, credentials that I can use to build up a reputation so that other people can discover me and then check my reputation, basically check my credentials. And then we are in the middle of digital identity. And that's basically what caught my attention in 2015. Then I did a lot of experiments with electric vehicle charging. Yeah, how do I know the car is a car? The charging pole is a charging pole. How can I automate transactions? How do I know the car, the electric vehicle, has a specific supply contract with another utility? Yeah, so that I can kind of, let's say, provide the energy and charge it to the supplier, preferred energy supplier of the car. And this has a lot to do with identity, with authorization, with provenance. And I did a lot of work with peer-to-peer energy trading. Yeah, like I have energy, I would like to trade it with a neighbor. I would like to trade it in a virtual grid, in a microgrid. How do I know the provenance of the energy? Is it green energy or, let's say, brown energy? And that's again related to identity. And at this time, so we started working on what's being called the collaborative utility. And that's one of these programmable economy concepts and sharing economy concept. You can basically, with software and code, you can basically spin up your own utility and then kind of, yeah, use algorithms to acquire customers and, yeah, use all kind of communication channels. And then again, use the community and algorithms and knowledge sharing and sharing economy to do also the after sale support and automate all the other processes. I think this was very kind of, let's say, visionary at this time, what Gartner wrote, what, let's say, the utilities did in the peer-to-peer energy trading market. But at least this was a good exercise to understand what will happen when digitization is moving forward and why identity is of such fundamental importance. And now we are moving in the age of generative AI, of generative agents. And suddenly the topic is getting even more important, because now a lot of content is being created. We will be oversaturated with content. And how do I know it's authentic? It's whatever. It's coming from a trusted source, from a qualified writer. And these kinds of questions are getting more and more important. And this is how I kind of, let's say, got engaged with identity.
Yeah. So basically you've gone as far down the rabbit hole as possible and kind of found that, hey, there's a really critical piece here that we currently don't have well enough in the infrastructure of the digitization, basically.
No, absolutely. So I think as a utility, this was perfect because I had the freedom and the resources to do all kind of, let's say, fancy research. But now when we founded Sverity in 2017, the key focus was to find the product market fit, to put the fancy research stuff aside and to really find the needle in the haystack, find the needle in the haystack where there's a product market fit, like there's a complete minimum viable ecosystem. There is a use case where digital identity makes sense. There's legal requirements that are already in place. I don't have to wait for the already wanted legal requirements. There are other legal requirements that are already in place, and digital identity helps to automate compliance. Yeah. Mm. And the use case must be simple. It must be able to retrofit existing infrastructures, and maybe even identity proving has been done by another party. And if these ingredients, critical success factors, come into place, then suddenly there's a needle in the haystack where you find a use case, an ecosystem and a domain where you can start applying the technology today and bring it into production for real life business use cases. And that's a bit what our focus is today. And yeah, we might want to kind of elaborate this a little bit more over the next couple of minutes.
So basically you're a physicist, you enjoy research, but during your time in the companies, you also gather yourself a good business background to be able to execute this in Sverity, right?
Oh yes, I think this is really Accenture. Yeah, so I worked for this almost 13 years for Accenture, and I worked in a team that was called Strategic IT Effectiveness, a fancy name. And the idea was basically to engage with customers and to identify transformation projects. Yeah, like there's a big problem, and then, oh my God, how do we solve it? We have to restructure, to retransform, we have to do mergers, acquisitions, whatever. And then kind of to basically kind of find ways to do this. And I think this was really kind of, let's say, kind of destiny, because when I worked for Accenture, this type of work was so-called cross-industry work. So I engaged with a lot of different industries. And at this time, I got a bit of business acumen in different industries. And this clearly helps now as well. Yeah,
that's cool. It's nice to have you here, Carsten, and it's a really interesting background you have. And based on what we kind of talked about now, would you try yourself on a small summary of where is digital identity today? Because I've seen a lot of people, they're satisfied with Google login, right? They're satisfied with, in Nordics, they're satisfied with bank ID, and we're happy we can identify ourselves on the internet. But as we're talking and you're mentioning now, there's so much more complexity that we currently don't understand, but you're working with. So what would you say that today's identity, what are the main problems with today's identity that we're not thinking about?
I think most people would maybe answer, let's say, control of data, my identity data, and privacy.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the problem. And here, kind of in federated systems, decentralized systems, there's always areas for improvement to improve control of data or about data and privacy. I think that's one thing. On the other hand, when I look into, let's say, the so-called dynamic defined value chains, and that's not only a fancy concept from Industry 4.0, from the fourth industrial revolution, it's happened also. So when I, as a person, let's say I fly from Germany to UK, to London, and then in London, I would like to rent a car, I would like to whatever, to access a building. Yeah, and if there is no kind of, let's say, common identity and trust system in place, then it's really difficult to do the transactions online in a digital way that someone can check my driver license or can check whatever, my authorization to enter a building in England. Yeah, and that's also a dynamically defined value chain, because no one in England knew before that I will show up today and would like to do something. For that reason, there are always processes to do identity authentication and authorization. And these problems are always kind of challenging. So when there is no common identity and trust network in place. Yeah. If you then think beyond human identity use cases, enterprise identity, object identity, digital product passports, supply chains, then the problems are even getting bigger, and there's even more dynamic. I think a human is kind of, let's say, how much do we have? So we have a couple of ID cards and driver licenses, a credit card, student cards, whatever in our physical wallet today. So it's not really much data. Maybe then I kind of credentialize, digitize my diploma. But when you then think about enterprise identity use cases, and then enterprise identity, of course, you have a legal entity identifier, what Clive is doing with LEIs. Then you have annual reports, you have sanction lists, you have political exposed persons, you have export control credentials, you have TÜV certificates, you have machine authorization certificates that the machine can transact on my behalf as a company. Maybe I will issue birth certificates of products. Products have a lot of provenance, there are a lot of master data. Then the products themselves, they have a lot of IoT data. You might want to protect the integrity, authenticity of the IoT data by signing them with verifiable credentials. And then other systems would like to fully machine automated process the data. And then suddenly the problem is much, much, much bigger in terms of size, volume, diversity of the data, requirements for schemas and these things compared to human identity. And these types of use cases, when you think about supply chain, the different credential types that are possible there, and the sheer amount of transactions, if you do product passports for billions and billions of objects, if you would like to have use credentials to prove authenticity, to verify an e-leaflet from a pharmaceutical product, a manual, operating manual for a big machine, a safety data sheet, or birth certificates, you name it, then the problem is getting bigger, bigger, and bigger. And you definitely need an identity and trust infrastructure for this. And all the solutions have been built for humans that kind of work in a small scope, but not in an open ecosystem. They will completely fail when you go more kind of, let's say, in the fourth industrial revolution, and for that reason there's a big need for new identity and trust solutions.
We have sorry we have written a little bit about this new customs app or system that the Norwegian customs has built, and in I'm mentioning Transmute when they kind of work with their schemas and they kind of try to build all this supply chain data models. Are you guys also part of that ecosystem of work?
Yeah, so basically, so we have also worked with the US Department of Homeland Security on the so-called e-commerce use case for global trade. Yeah, right. And you can basically think about a US citizen and then ordering on an e-commerce platform an e-commerce product such as a pyjama, a kid's pyjama, and the kid's pyjama is then produced in China, and then the process starts. First, you basically have to register the intent to sell of the platform and of the manufacturer. And then you have identity of the pyjama, of the batch of the pyjamas, and then you basically ship it to the United States, you have a packaging list, you have a manifest. And in the end, what the customs organizations would like to do, and where the US Department of Homeland Security was extremely early and also very visionary, they basically said, hey, why not use verifiable credentials? Because then have all the data as verifiable credential, my big customs data lake, and our algorithms can verify them. The quality of the data is much better. It's linked data. It's much easier to develop algorithms that can check whether a product is illicit or not illicit, whether the proof of origin for this product is okay or not, whether it's being shipped in an area where a lot of people live that maybe consume drugs, yeah, and we might want to expect drugs in the e-commerce shipment, weapons or other illicit goods. And I think today that's a big, big challenge in terms of available data and quality, and kind of to bring this to the next level, digitally signed data in a format such as W3C verifiable credentials. So it's a big improvement. So the DHS is doing this. I think Transmute is continuing to work with DHS in US on these use cases. When you think about this e-commerce, global trade, it's a super, super complex ecosystem and use case. Yeah, I think that's a little bit the adoption challenge. For that reason, we focus on other use cases, but also the European Union, they have a similar approach. They basically have the idea, they have a policy called Eco-Design for Sustainable Products. And in the policy of Eco-Design for Sustainable Products, they introduce the concept of verifiable digital product passports, which means if you would like to go circular and everything's more sustainable, then you have to have proof of provenance. Yeah. And for that reason, and verifiable proof of provenance. And for that reason, people thinking about the verifiable digital product passports, which is an identity for product, not a human, not a person, but for product, it's verifiable. And then you can register the products at the customs registry. And the DPP registry is also something the European Union is looking into. And these are very important use cases, especially customs use case can really drive adoption. However, having said this, the global trade process are pretty complex. So that's a little bit the challenge for the use case. Yeah.
So we're kind of mentioning a lot of interesting use cases and ways to kind of use this technology. We know about verifiable credentials and DIDs. Just to confirm, there is nothing that is in production right now, right? There's a lot of proof of concepts and something might maybe in pilots. Or do you guys have anything in kind of high level production?
Yeah, well, this is what we indeed achieved, Snorre. We're very proud of this. And this is what we're doing for the US pharma supply chain. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that's called authorized trading partner. And that's interesting from a couple of perspectives. First, I would like to highlight a lot of people are saying, hey, I'm doing central bank digital currency, I'm doing tokenization, I'm doing whatever, cryptocurrencies, and now I would like to move it in the institutional space. We need regulation. The regulators, the policymakers must move faster to do stuff. Right? And I hear this all the time, even when to, I think today or yesterday started Hannover Messe, which is a big industrial trade fair in Germany. And then there was a survey and people said, oh my God, digitization, Industry 4.0 is failing. Industry 4.0 is failing because there are too many regulatory roadblockers and the policymakers must resolve them. And that's interesting because if they start resolving it, takes long time and you cannot sell your product. I think it's always important to find a use case where there are legal requirements already in place today that demand kind of identity, digital signatures, verifiable credentials. And when you use these technologies, you can automate compliance, make something more efficient, improve your processes, make, for example, improve patient health because the supply chain is much more secure. And that's basically what we did. So we didn't ask anyone kind of to come up with more legal requirements. I think, of course, this is in some areas it's absolutely needed, but it doesn't help a startup. For that reason, we looked into use cases where there is legal requirements already in place today. If not, in a best case scenario, the legal requirements should have been written 10 years ago. Because sometimes it takes 10 years until a law is being in place, a policy, and then takes 10 years to do the interpretation, to adopt it in ecosystem, develop technology, test it, validate the technology in the process, takes some time. So this is what we found when I talked at the beginning about the needle in the haystack. So we found a use case where legal requirements are in place, where a full ecosystem was already in place.
Wow.
The ecosystem was fully educated. And that's important because when we as a startup find a use case, but there's no ecosystem, then we can waste 2 years to build an ecosystem. If the ecosystem is not educated, we can waste another 2 years to educate the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And for us, the critical success factors are also that the use case is simple and that the people have a business case. And maybe even that there's an easy retrofitting strategy in place where I develop a simple API, I plug it into existing, let's say, ERP or supply chain systems, and then I can start using the wallet. And last but not least, it would be preferable if someone else has done the identity proving in this large ecosystem. And that's what we found in the United States with the US Drug Supply Chain Security Act. And the US Drug Supply Chain Security Act was from 2013. And the key idea of the US Drug Supply Chain Security Act is, the policy goal is to make pharma supply chains much more secure, to make sure that they are, to avoid that there are illicit online pharmacies, to avoid that there are ways to inject fake products, counterfeit products, dangerous products, into a pharma supply chain. And that's so-called Drug Supply Chain Security Act. And Drug Supply Chain Security Act has a couple of components. First, identity of the pharma packages. They must be all serialized. So which means they have a product identifier, a batch number, a serial number, individual serial number that I can scan. And then when it's being scanned, a system can automatically process the data. Then there's a product identity, product verification requirements. I scan the package and then have the product number, the batch number, and the serial number. I send all of this data to the manufacturer. The manufacturer does a lookup in the database and then the manufacturer replies with whether it's it's a serial number, alleged serial number. In this database, or it's a fake, illicit serial number. And that's, by the way, very interesting because in whatever supply chain you are, and here we are in pharma, you must provide tools, or you should provide tools. In some cases, you don't need to do it, but you would like to protect your brand and your products so that other people can check the authenticity of your products. And the most simple check is random serial numbers. So which means I, as a manufacturer, put a serial number, batch number, product number on every package. And then I treat the serial numbers as a secret. But when any customer comes to me, or let's say wholesaler, retailer, they can basically scan it and ask, is this a legit serial number or not? I will look in my database and send it back. And protecting product authenticity with serial numbers is one of the very basic security features. And of course, it's one of the security features when you print money. Then you also have random serial numbers. I, as a money faker, would need to invent serial numbers, or I just put the same serial number on all the printed money notes, and this is an easy to detect. And that's what they did. And now there's cybersecurity coming in, because not everyone should send product verification requests to the manufacturer. Let's say I'm a big pharma company, such as Johnson & Johnson, and when people start sending me product verification requests, let's say there are some state actors, cyber state actors, that would like to disturb my pharma supply chain, they can send fake product verification requests to my API. And then I have fake serial numbers in my system. And this would be a disaster for the compliance processes, yeah? Because then I have to check, oh my God, is this a real product or not? Who sent it? Do I now have fake pharmaceutical products in my supply chain? This is a complete disaster. For that reason, the Drug Supply Chain Security Act introduces the requirements of authorized trading partner check. And authorized trading partner check is basically check whether a supply chain actor has a license to operate, let's say a wholesaler. Mm. Has the wholesaler a license to operate to wholesale my pharmaceutical product? Has the dispenser, the pharmacy, do they have a license to operate? And then by law, I only need to respond to requests where, let's say, a wholesaler or pharmacy has a valid license to operate. And if not, I don't respond. And this has to do a lot of with compliance at the one hand, and on the other hand, has a lot to do with cybersecurity and with protecting my API endpoints as a manufacturer, so that only authorized trading partner can send a request and everyone else can't send a request. And that's where cybersecurity meets compliance. And that's basically where digital identity has the biggest value in these types of use cases. Yeah, that's what we're basically doing in the US. So with the big pharma manufacturers, but also with small manufacturers, wholesalers, and dispensers. And the entire ecosystem is between 60 and 80,000 supply chain actors, which is pretty nice. Yeah. One final thought. The use case is super, super simple. We have just one credential type. Okay, we have two credential types, identity credentials and authorized trading partner credentials. We don't have more credentials, and we don't have complex diplomas, yeah, with very complex semantics and structure. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And I think that's my advice to anyone who's kind of listening to the podcast. If you think your use case is simple, it's not simple enough. And the critical success factor to bring something to adoption right now is the success factors I've mentioned, but also simplicity of the use case. It must be simple. And then it can be kind of, let's say, put into production and scaled. And that's why we say, so we had been lucky. So we found a needle in the haystack where the technology could have been brought, and we brought it to production today without waiting until the European digital identity wallet is there. This takes maybe another 2 to 5 years. And for that reason, it's for us was important to find these needles in the haystack where technology can be applied today.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting story. I think you guys have really hit the nail on the head here. And I think it's far too easy just to go and say, I'm going to solve all the identity problems out there with this solution that is yet to even exist in an ecosystem. It's just there are standards and there are ways of testing it out, but it's not ingrained because identity is so important for everyone, right?
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah.
But that's really
I have some funny facts, some fun facts, yeah. And maybe some of the listeners have heard about Silk Road, yeah, this internet market in the darknet, yeah. And I think Will Ross was the guy who kind of set up single-handed the Silk Road, peer-to-peer marketplace for buying and selling drugs, yeah. And he basically said, hey, we can't trust the government. We need to set up such a market. It must be anonymous. And let's combine Tor with Bitcoin, yeah, and then put a peer-to-peer marketplace in the internet, and then people can do a transaction, pay with Bitcoin, and the other guys then sending the drugs via US mail to the buyer, yeah. And there's not 100% correlation with the US Drug Supply Chain Security Act, but what's interesting, morphine, methadone, so hard drugs, all of this are so-called controlled substances, yeah. And today, I think people who are doing the what's the name of the drug in English?
Oxycontin, or is it a painkiller, or what kind of drug?
No, a drug that's legalized in some countries, yeah.
Weed or?
Yes, weed, yeah. Yes, absolutely, the weed, and that's also controlled substances. And what's interesting, so at this point, Bitcoin enabled and blockchain enabled the peer-to-peer market in the darknet, the Silk Road. And now today, so we have the US Drug Supply Chain Security to avoid that a second Silk Road can happen with all the controlled substances regulations on the one hand side. And on the other hand side, so we're using decentralized identity, decentralized technologies, kind of to make the supply as the pharma supply chains more secure, to avoid that such a second Silk Road can happen. And I think I find it an interesting story how it kind of evolved from, let's say, a pirate kind of idea to see with compliance technology. And that's a bit of a fun fact.
Yeah, but that's really cool. Because I always say that we think we're super digital. We got everything on a mobile phone. We got a computer and everything has a website. But the digital world it's existed for a long time, but we haven't been on it for about more than 20 years. Yeah. And we have so much more to learn, so much more errors to do. And now we're seeing, like, as you talked about earlier in the podcast, the importance of identity and how the internet has missed that part as a core infrastructure. And how it plays into all these problems we've seen, and how you can say that it can solve a lot of our core problems and not let them repeat themselves. So it's
maybe one more thought. You mentioned this. I think now we have kind of the idea of digital infrastructures, and we're digital, and we have this e-commerce, internet, and do transactions, all this kind of stuff. But identity is missing. There's also the other idea of digital product passports or digital twins of products, yeah. Mm. And this also came up in the German industry in the late 1990s, if not before, with General Electric. I think it was General Electric guy, General Electric, who defined digital twins in the space industry, yeah. So the problem is, okay, we need digital twins, we have Industry 4.0. The ideas are also 25 years and older. It's not brand new ideas, but still the infrastructure is not there. Yeah, and this shows how the demand is there, but the infrastructure, the legal requirements, the trust frameworks are not yet there. They're all evolving now. And for that reason, if you engage in digital identity, it's the timing is the most critical success factor. Yeah, if you're too early, it's a mess, yeah. Then you have a lot of technical debt and you don't survive it. If you're too late, it's clearly a first mover market, yeah. Especially when it's regulated. If you're a first mover and get a product market fit, get adoption, then you make some revenues and then you can scale your business. You can afford to certify to do all the security checks and certifications and validations and common criteria and you name it, yeah. And afford to do it with your software because you have proved the product market fit, you have the ability to execute. But if you're too late, then the barrier of entrance, the hurdle, is so high, you don't make it in the market anymore. So timing is super, super complex. I think there was Uber before there was Uber. There was Airbnb before there was Airbnb. But the real Uber and Airbnb, they succeeded because they basically built up the momentum at the at the top of the financial crisis, where all the bankers kind of needed to drive taxi. It was good for Uber. And all the real estate owners, they basically had a problem with their financing of the real estate, their apartments, and then they put them on Airbnb. So, and I think this timing for digital identities, you have to look in a domain because timing is different in different domains. Yeah. But I think finding the needle in the haystack with the right timing, that's super critical, whether you're a startup, a venture, or a big corporate that wants to invest into it. Yeah. And that's also a little bit our expertise and experiences, kind of to understand what factors do you have to can you influence, and and what's the probability to be successful at all today?
Absolutely. No, thank you. We're gonna round off here with a couple of questions. I want to ask you, how long will we see like this first mover window, you believe? In different, like, I'm not saying that you're gonna now look into the glass ball and basically define everything, but how long of a window do you think we will have to be able to build in certain domains? What's your gut feeling on this? I talk to the Norwegian government, and they say that we're not gonna be able to release this EU wallet that everyone's talking about until 2027. Mm-hmm. That's a couple of years until. So I wonder what's your gut feeling about how long will this window of opportunity be there?
I think if you talk about the European Digital Identity Wallet, so we are, by the way, a consortium member of the European Wallet Consortium, which is led by the Nordics, and we are looking into organizational identity and leading a work stream about credential issuers, the authentic sources, the company registries in Sweden, in Germany. That's a bit what we're doing there. Yeah. But I think the window of opportunity, especially, let's talk about human identity. There are hundreds and hundreds of startups that are basically kind of, let's say, looking into human identity, all led by the idea of the Cyberpunk Manifesto from Eric Huge, who basically said, hey, we need to have identity and cryptography and privacy. We need to fix it, yeah? And I think all the startups will disappear when the European Digital Identity Wallet is there for humans. And to get into this, that's a huge compliance, whatever hurdle, as we discussed a couple of minutes before. Mm. And then, let's say in Germany, that's not kind of, let's say, a secret. You can also read it on the internet that, for example, Deutsche Telekom is investing with a team in building something that's its European identity wallet together with Verimi. Verimi got a funding, as there's rumors, I think there's huge funding. Maybe I shouldn't repeat the number because I don't know if it's true or not, but Verimi is kind of, let's say, a lot of big companies, German DAX companies are invested into Verimi, and both of them are now building a wallet. Yeah. Uh-huh. And there's just one wallet from the German government. It's the EUDI wallet for humans. Maybe this window of opportunity is already closed, yeah? In Germany, maybe. Who knows? Who can compete with this? There's one of our competitors that just filed for, that's focused on human identity only, and they just filed for bankruptcy because there was no business model, no product market fit. I think to answer this question, for the EUDI wallet, maybe this window of opportunity is already closed. But in Germany, not sure about other countries, there will be not much players that get authorized to produce such a wallet and offer it to the people. But of course, then you need to connect an EUDI wallet with a special purpose wallet for given domain, and then there are other opportunities there. Yeah, it's. I think the question can only be answered for a given domain. Yeah. In terms of what's been an opportunity, I think in the supply chain, I would expect at least there's an opportunity for the next 2-3 years, depending on the jurisdictions and the domain.
Cool. Thank you for your insight, and it comes with good way. It's based on your experience from Accenture and Business Thoughts, and you are running a startup now. So really appreciate it. One last question would be, as we just like to hear, what are your company's preferred standards when you're now implementing these identity standards across across your product and projects?
Yeah, so we primarily use, of course, decentralized identifiers. So we work with DidEther. So we like DidEther a lot because we believe that smart contract-based technologies offer a lot of opportunity for public registries. Yeah? And DID is basically, if you use DLT technology, then DID is being kind of, let's say, in simple words, DID documents being stored in a public registry. But also, if you think about trust lists, if you think about revocation lists for publicly available revocation data, yeah, then smart contract-based blockchains are very good. For that reason, we look a lot into DidEther, but we also look in DidKey for the humans, DidWeb for some ecosystems where DLT is not so relevant. And in the German industry, people work a lot with DidIndi, because there have been a lot of first movers and they started with DidIndi. On the credential formats, I like the JSON-LD because of all the schemas, especially in the industrial use cases. You definitely need schemas to interpret the data or to check constraints. You can even kind of, let's say, apply some shape constraint language to check constraints in your credentials, and that's extremely powerful for these types of use cases. And on the credential exchange format, we of course like a lot for human identity the OpenID for verifiable credentials and verifiable presentations, which is also part of the European Digital Identity Wallet. And on the other hand, also DITCOM and ARIS protocols. That's a bit the blend of technologies we are working with.
Yeah, cool. Thanks a lot for that update. I really appreciate the conversation, Carsten, and I hope to see you again at any of these events that we have met before. I assume you're going to... So you're not taking IIW this time?
No. Unfortunately, I've never been at IIW. But my team went there last year, and I love the IIW. I've participated in the hybrid meetings in the past over COVID. Yeah, I need to go there, definitely. That's really a pity.
they're now launching this European version, though, DICE.
Yes.
Yeah. It might be worth catching on, and I think I'll try to get there.
And, of course, I would like to make a little bit of... I would like to do some advertisement on the Rebooting Web of Trust.
Yeah? Absolutely.
The Rebooting Web of Trust will happen mid of September, I think third week of September, in Cologne in Germany. Yes. And I think especially for the European audience of this podcast, I really can recommend going there. It's a fantastic event. A lot of 100 global experts from all over the world will join the Rebooting Web of Trust event. It's an unconference. It's not like, hey, I have a monologue on stage. It's really working with content, is sharing ideas, building upon each other's ideas, creating new solutions. I think for technology-oriented people, but also for non-technology-oriented people, I think that's a lot of opportunity, a lot of fun. And yeah, if people would like to experience this, I highly recommend to join the Rebooting Web of Trust 12 in Cologne, Germany in September this year. And maybe Snorre, you can put a link to the event and to Rebooting Web of Trust into the notes of this podcast. Yeah,
absolutely. I will do that. I was actually going to mention that event as well, but you got there first. I really enjoy that event as myself, and I hope to be there as well.
Absolutely. Slower.
Perfect. Thank you for the conversation. And then it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. What was really exciting having the conversation with you, Snorre, and looking forward to meeting you next time.
Yes, absolutely. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the DIN podcast, and keep on following us to find more great content. visit DIN Foundation to subscribe and get in touch with us if you want to join in for a conversation. Have a great day.